This episode is brought to you by Shopify, the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Whether you're selling flaky soul or fine art prints, Shopify covers all your sales channels to simplify selling online and in person. Plus, they provide industry-leading tools and 24/7 support to ignite your growth. This is Possibility, powered by Shopify. To sign up, visit shopify.co.uk/podcast23, all lowercase.
Hey everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Homer and Applesauce's minor league podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined this week by Lucas Vlahos and Ken Levin. How you guys doing this week?
Good.
Very good.
Can I complain right off the bat here, because this is a component of how my week went?
Okay.
About the farm report.
Oh, we'll get to that. Don't worry.
Oh, God. I need to go on like a specifically structured rant about my experience with the farm report this week.
Yep. No. I know. I know. I don't even know what else to say other than I know.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was. We'll get to that. Not great. All right. So promote, extend, trade. And on today's date, back in 1940, two brothers, Richard and Maurice, they opened up a hamburger restaurant in San Bernardino, and they called it McDonald's because that was their name, their brothers. So obviously, you know, McDonald's turned into a billion-dollar worldwide empire. It's existed for like 80-something years. They've done some stuff right, but invariably in like 80 years of business around the world, you do some things wrong too. So what defunct, discontinued McDonald items that none of us have been even alive to have. So it's not like we could have possibly have had any of these things. Which ones are we going to promote, extend, or trade? Okay. First, we have the McDLT. And I'm not really sure the point of this, but it literally was just a regular burger, but it came in styrofoam packaging that had the patty on one side, and then the lettuce and tomatoes and like vegetables on the other side. So that
is it like McDo-it-yourself?
I don't actually know what the DLT. I mean, I guess it's McDonald's lettuce tomato, but that doesn't make sense. But I don't know.
Huh?
Yeah, I know. It was I don't know. So we have that. The next one is something much more self-explanatory: the McSpaghetti. And last but not least is
A horrifying thought.
Yeah, I know. Last but not least is the Hula Burger, which is literally just a grilled pineapple chunk on a bun.
No burger?
No, just pineapple.
It's not a pineapple on a burger. It's a pineapple sandwich.
Yes, it is literally just a pineapple sandwich.
What the fuck?
The rationale being that people who were vegetarians and Catholics during Lent specifically would
Fucking pineapple in place of a burger?
Mm-hmm. Grilled pineapple, you know.
I wish we could have an insight into the board meeting when this was fucking pitched. How much rips a line of Coke, because I assume it's the 70s or 80s. All right. We put a pineapple instead of the burger, man.
It's like the meme where the guy gets thrown out of the boardroom meeting at the window.
Yeah, except in this case, it would have been justified. Jesus.
I think we're all going to trade the spaghetti.
Yeah, that's a horrifying thought.
Mm-hmm.
I want to trade all of them. They all
That's why they don't exist anymore.
At least
he's all below.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The DLT at least is still a burger, I guess. Like, you put it together yourself, but it's still ultimately a okay McDonald's hamburger. So
right.
Extend that, I guess.
Yeah, that was my rationale also.
And throw the other two into the sun because
throw away the pineapple burger.
Let's be real. Like, you cannot tell me that the pineapples that McDonald's is getting for the McPineapple or whatever the fuck it was called are high quality.
That's also a good point.
Good Lord.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know why the McSpaghetti was discontinued. I mean, I can take a guess because it's a fucking McSpaghetti. And if you look at a picture of it, it looks fucking disgusting.
What's the Filipino fast food chain that does everything, including its spaghetti? Like Jollibee's or Jollibee. Something like that? Yeah. Jollibee. Yeah, they have spaghetti, apparently. I've never tried it.
Well, it looked horrible. The McHula burger was discontinued because the sales were not there.
The Hula burger, like, I was intrigued. You're like, oh, I mean, the risk of ruining my New Yorker cred, like, I've come around on the idea of pineapple on pizza. Like, pineapple's good. Oh,
son of a bitch.
Pineapple
it's just not a protein.
Yeah, exactly. If you put the pineapple on a burger, that I'm there. Could possibly,
yeah,
I'm like, there for that.
Yeah,
but just the pineapple.
Just the pineapple.
What the fuck, man?
I mean,
it's not a meal. That's not anything. It doesn't make any sense.
It's just a piece of pineapple on bread.
Just that's give me the is. Pineapple. I don't actually like pineapple on its own. But why with the bread? It doesn't. This is bothering me now. I was better off not knowing that this has existed.
And then, last but not least, the McDLT was discontinued because the styrofoam packaging was causing, like, more environmental damage than it was worth it. So, yeah. And also, also, if you go on YouTube and look, there's a really terrible McDLT commercial with Jason Alexander, like, doing a song and dance number. Did you ever consider, I mean, I don't get, like, McDonald's fast food too much, and when I do, I usually just get, like, nuggets or something, but do either of you guys ever consider, like, your hamburger being warm and therefore making your lettuce and tomato also warm? Have you ever considered that a problem?
No.
I've never considered that, period.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so. And now that I sit here and think about it, I want my tomato warm because it'd be weird to just have a cold slice.
I think we can all agree we'd like the entire thing to be roughly the same temperature.
Right. Mm. Like, you don't want, if you leave it for too long, like, I don't want the lettuce cold, but if it's warm for too long, it wilts. You want it, like, warm but still crunchy. But that's not enough of a justification to go through the fucking McDLT thing here. Like,
well, apparently in the early 80s it was. They were high on...
High on something.
High on cocaine and the economy.
Thanks, Reagan. Mm-hmm. You know, this is just another thing we can blame Ronald Reagan for. You know, the
McDLT.
Destroying the world economy, generally ruining the trajectory of America. The McDLT.
Son of a bitch.
I don't know which
I've never hated Reagan more than this moment.
Yeah, you know, you thought it couldn't get worse, and then.
Well, if you want things to get worse, then just wait till a little bit later in this podcast, listeners.
Before we jump into the actual content this week, can I shout someone who tweeted at me?
Sure.
User at DavidLove26. I don't know why he was at the Columbia PhD commencement, but apparently he heard my name and tweeted at me about it. So thanks, David. Appreciate it. Assuming you're a listener, because I don't know how else you'd know me.
The name sounds familiar, so I believe that is a listener, a common reply person in the tweets.
Nice. If you were getting a degree or someone you know is getting a degree, congrats to you.
Would you recommend someone get a degree?
I have a very long and complicated answer to that question that is not worth the time it would take.
Mm. All right, so we'll shift now to our way to early draft updates. This week, my guy, Cole Carrig, he plays San Diego State University. The Aztecs played 3 games this week over the weekend against Air Force. Friday's game, they lost 4-2. Keurig went 2 for 5. Both of them were singles, and then he stole a base. And Saturday's game, the Aztecs won 5-4. He went 1 for 4 with a double and 3 strikeouts. And then because Air Force Academy is in Colorado, they're a couple of hours back, so they haven't started their Sunday game yet. So that's all there is for Keurig for this week. 2 games, 3 for 9 with a double, stolen base, and 3 strikeouts. A good week for him, I guess, given everything that's his season has been, the disappointment that it's been. And on the season, he's currently hitting 321, 372, 496, with 7 doubles, 5 triples, 2 home runs, 12 steals in 35 games, and 8 walks to 22 strikeouts. Ken, Miami third baseman, Yohandri Morales, how did his week go down?
Pretty great. He played 4 games, one against someone called Presbyterian, 1 against FIU, and 2 at Pittsburgh. And he went 10 for 17 with 2 dingers, which is a .588 batting average, 6.11 OBP, and .941 slugging for the week. So, yeah, pretty great.
Week.
He did strike out 3 times and walk 0 times, but I think he'll take that given everything else. And he's currently up to 395, 463, 654 on the season, with just under 20% strikeout rate and about 11% walk rate. So I'd say continuing to trend upward, but it looks like he might be in play to the Mets at around 30.
Pretty good for a guy who's like major red flag supposedly was the strikeouts. I mean, a power hitter like he is with a strikeout rate around 20%, like, I'll take that.
Yep.
Even in college, you know.
This is pretty much the line you would have hoped. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you'd like it to be a little lower against this level of competition, but, you know, again, given the power, you want him to be aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
All right, and last this week is Lucas, and you have MSU outfielder Colton Ledbetter.
So Ledbetter had a bit of a down week. He went, let me count. Oh, God, I wish this header would stay in place. He was 2 for 12 in 3 games. He had a homer, a walk, struck out 4 times, and also he failed to reach base for only the 3rd time. In a game this season, in a game on my birthday, of course. So thanks, Colton. I appreciate it. On the season, he's still batting 315, 447, 586. So my level of concern is approximately 0. If anything, this is almost what I wanted to happen, in that he's cooling off a little bit right when teams are going to be in heavy on guys, and maybe that leaves him to float down the board a little bit. He was not in Baseball America's most recent first round mock draft. So
yeah, I was going to talk about that. Yep.
Yep. I won't steal your thunder too much there, but he did not appear in the first round. So still potentially in play for the Mets at 32. And I mean, I'm not going to overanalyze one so week. I mean, he still hit a homer, so things happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so Baseball America, they had their 2nd mock draft for this season. Dylan Cruz and Paul Skeens, both from LSU, were number 1 and number 2. Not surprising. You know, Cruz is hitting, this is an insane line. Like, he's hitting 438, 594, 757, 13 homers, 2 stolen bases, 54 walks to 27 strikeouts in 50 games. That'll play.
I think Cruz is literally the best 1-1 prospect since Bryce Harper.
It feels like it. And then Skeens, on the pitching side, he has a 1.70 ERA in 79.2 innings over 13 starts, with 46 hits allowed, 14 walks, and 152 strikeouts. So, you know, them being number 1 and number 2, that's completely unsurprising.
And LSU is somehow not the best team in the country.
Yeah, I know.
Wake Forest is better, which is just wild.
I mean, I guess baseball is not basketball. You can rely on one star. Yohanji Morales, Ken's player. They have him being selected number 15 overall by the White Sox. That's up a couple of spots from when they predicted him to be selected 18. They had the Brewers taking him 18 with their first mock draft. My follow, Cole Carrig. Thomas's follow, high school shortstop, Rokolowski. And very surprisingly, Lucas's follow, Colton Ledbetter, not in consideration for the first round. My guy not being in consideration, Carrig. Okay, that makes sense to me because he was very borderline first. Actually, he was never first round talent to begin with. He was like on the cusp, you know, a couple of picks after the first round ended. So him not being in consideration makes sense. Same thing with Rokolowski. It is surprising, though, that Ledbetter has not hit himself into the back end of the first round, though.
I think there's a really good chance that a more analytically inclined team, Orioles and Brewers are the ones that really come to mind, maybe the Yankees, takes him, and it appears to be a reach, but I think the profile really plays to what those teams like. But Baseball America knows more than I do, of course, at this point. So,
yeah. So, what do we have? We have about 2 months before the draft, and about a month left of college baseball. So, things can a lot can change. All right. I guess that was the positive part of our podcast.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. So, well, after this break, we are going to review the Mets affiliate and their week. And if anyone wants to just log off now, shut this podcast off now, I completely understand.
I would almost encourage you to do it. You know, like, save yourself the pain.
Oh, there's a lot of pain. If you're a masochist, then stay with us.
You can feed your ambition.
You can find your balance.
You can focus on your craft.
You can work smarter. Make business energy effortless with You Energy. Get fast, tailored quotes, smart solutions to keep on top of your bills, and all your utilities in one place. Get a quote now at youenergy.co.uk. Terms and conditions apply. Full details can be found online.
This week on Get Hench,
we're talking to top athletes about how they remain at the top.
Hey, Sergey! Wait up! Sergey!
Carl, why are you here?
I saw you run out of the house. What are you doing?
I'm running.
Yeah, but what are you running from? The cops.
No, I'm running and listening to our podcast.
You're going
to
need a better alibi than that, bro. I'll get your passport, and I know a guy who can get us a car. After that, we're on our own.
No, I just want to listen to my podcast.
Don't wombat it, meerkat it.
Simples.
And now for today's fun football scores. Nerves nil, friends made 11.
Goals 4, giggles 17.
Wheelchair access 1, feeling left out 0.
Celebrations 3, high fives 21.
McDonald's Fun Football. Free football coaching for all kids aged 5 to 11. Search McDonald's Football to find out more.
This is Emma.
Hiya.
Emma works at McDonald's in Merthyr Tydfil. She's a shift manager, a vital part of the team.
Well, I try.
But more importantly, Emma's a mum of three. So when she decided to come back to work, Emma needed hours that fitted with her kids' school days.
I really did.
So we did what we could to make that happen.
And it helped a lot.
Well, you're part of our family too, Emma.
Aw, thanks.
Let's balance life and work together. Apply today at mcdonalds.co.uk/jobs.
Alrighty. So, the Syracuse Mets. They played a series against the Buffalo Bisons this week. Bisons are the Toronto Blue Jays AAA affiliate. It was a bad week for Syracuse. I think it's putting it lightly. They went 1-5 against them. So, it's their second week in a row now where they went 1-5. The thing is, though, these weren't just losses. These are terrible, demoralizing, horrible losses. On Tuesday, they allowed a run in the bottom of the 10th inning in extras, and they lost 10-9. On Thursday, they allowed four runs in the bottom of the 9th inning and lost 6-5. on Friday for the second day in a freaking row. They allowed 4 runs in the bottom of the 9th, and they lost 8-6. On Saturday, they allowed 2 runs in the bottom of the 9th and lost 8-7. And it's like, a loss is a loss at the end of the day, but these losses just really, like, suck. And for the players, I'm sure it sucks for the players, but do you guys know how much it sucks for us to look and to be like, okay, Syracuse has an 8-6 margin of error. That looks like they're going to win. I'm just going to go take a quick shower. I'm just going to go make something to eat real quick. And then you come back to the game and all of a sudden just everything is just flipped. And you thought you're going to be writing a happy recap. And all of a sudden you're just banging your head on a wall, on a table. You're smashing your computer.
Yep.
Lucas, unfortunately, got to recap 3 of these losses.
In a row.
And this is just the start. This is just the start.
I did the Wednesday. So to contextualize this for our listeners, I usually do the Thursday recap, which is Wednesday games, and the Saturday recap, which is Friday games. Is that correct? No.
I don't know.
Whatever. Usually I do 2 days separated by 1, but our good friend Thomas is in Toronto this weekend, I think, or something like that. Which meant I had to do 3 days in a row, and Syracuse blew the lead on all 3 days in the 9th. But wait, there's more.
Yes, oh, there's more. Don't worry.
Billy Mays here.
Yeah, so anyway, with their 1 win and their 5 losses this week, Syracuse is 16-23, so they are 13 games behind the Norfolk Tides, and they are 9th place in the International League East. They are just a half game in front of the Rochester Red Wings for worst team in the division. So that's Syracuse. Moving on to Binghamton. The Rumble Ponies, they played the Hartford Yard Goats, which is the Rockies' AA affiliate. They went 3-4 on the week. That's good to put that in context for this week. They went 3-4, and that's really good. They played 7 games instead of 6 this week because they had a doubleheader from a postponement at the end of April they made up this week. So Binghamton is 14-18 on the season. That is 8 games behind Portland Sea Dogs for first place. And just like Syracuse, a lot of these losses were really bad losses. On Tuesday, they allowed 6 runs in the 9th inning, and they lost 11-9. On Thursday, they allowed 2 runs in the 9th inning to tie the game, and they allowed a run in the 11th inning, and they lost 4-3. Friday, they allowed 3 runs in the 9th, and they lost 10-3. Friday, it just on and on and on. It is just bad. You guys remember the podcast that we did, like, either a little bit before the season started or, like, a little bit after the season started, and we were talking about, you know, what possible relief pitchers could contribute to the Mets in AA or AAA. As you can see, there is no one.
Nope. Zilch. Nada. Zero.
Not good. Brooklyn Cyclones, they played the Wilmington Blue Rocks, and that's the Nationals High A affiliate. They also played 7 games this week, making up a rain postponement from late April. And Brooklyn went 2-5 on the week, so that leaves them at 11-19 on the season, which is still dead last in the South Atlantic League North. And 8.5 games behind the Hudson Valley Renegades. Continuing the trend, Cyclones had some bullpen problems. On Friday, Wilmington scored 2 runs in the bottom of the 9th to win 8-7 after the Cyclones scored 3 runs in the top of the inning.
Mm-hmm.
Saturday, the Blue Rocks scored 1 in the bottom of the 9th to walk it off. And in today's game, Sunday, the Blue Rocks scored a run in the bottom of the 8th to break the tie that they had with Brooklyn and eventually win. So not a 9th inning loss, walk-off, excuse me, but 8th inning, close enough. And
it's just not like, what are we supposed to say?
Yes, I don't know. And finally, the St. Lucie Mets. They played the Daytona Tortugas. That's a tongue twister. The Daytona Tortugas. The Tortugas are the Cincinnati Reds single-A affiliate. And St. Lucie went 1-4 against them. The last game of this series is starting up basically right now as we're starting to record. So we're not going to factor that in. But if they win that game, they lose that game, whatever, it's still a bad week. You know, if they go 2-4 or 1-5, that doesn't really make much of a difference.
They're also getting blown out in a lot of these games.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say, I don't know if it's good or I don't know if it's bad, but basically all of the losses are like nothing close. I mean, I guess I'd rather see these blowouts than the bullpen blow things in like the little last minute of the game. So, But there's still time. We could see what happens in tonight's game. Never say never, you know? Yeah. So St. Lucie is 8-24 as we speak. They are in last place in the Florida State League East. They are dead last in the Florida State League period. And there's actually only one other team in all three single A leagues that's worse than St. Lucie. The poor lowly Stockton Ports, which is, surprise, surprise, Oakland's team over in the California League. They are the only team that's worse than St. Lucie. Not that it matters. St. Lucie is 11.5 games back behind the Palm Beach Cardinals. We have to look at things on a positive note, though. St. Lucie does not have a magic elimination number yet. There is a month and a half, 2 months or so, whatever, left in the first half. So maybe they make up that 11.5 game deficit.
Yeah. Stranger things have happened.
I mean, I don't know if I put money down on that one, but it is a possibility. Statistically, it could happen.
Let me ask this.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys concerned? And I don't mean about the win-loss record, because who actually gives a shit about wins and losses in the minor leagues? Unless you're Sandy Alderson circa like 2015. We thought the team was getting better in terms of developmental pipeline, in terms of actually having a functional talent dev operation. And evaluating that based on wins and losses isn't the way to go. But at some point, it does become slightly instructive. And it's bad.
I know we touched on this last week a little bit. You know, it's... we're in year two or year three, I forget, whatever, of like the Cohen era, and you got to give time for people to get hired and for them to start working their magic and whatever else. So, but all that said, yes, I'm concerned, not a lot, but I'm starting to get concerned about individual players more so than the system as a whole and how things are trending. There are players that I would have expected to be doing better than they are at this point. Most notably, I would say Kevin Parada and Alex Ramirez on the hitting side, and Blade Tidwell and Dominic Hamill on the pitching side.
Yeah.
And, you know, those guys are, I'm not going to say struggling, because that's not the right word to use, but they are not doing as well as one would have hoped. And in some of their cases, specifically Ramirez and Hamill, because they were in the system last year, whereas Tidwell and Parada really weren't, we're not seeing steps being taken forward, which, to tie it back to the beginning, is where you would start seeing, I guess, the evidence of, like, you know, a competent developmental system in place.
Like, where are the developmental gains that we've seen this year? Who's like actually taken a notable step forward? Which is also a question I think we asked last week, but like,
yeah, I mean, I would say Mike Vassell. Mike Vassell, who's off to a very good start.
Sure.
But outside of him, I'm...
Pariah's still doing the weird hand thing.
Yeah. Ramirez is still doing the weird bat thing. It's like, I don't know.
Jacob Reimer is still beating the ball into the ground. Like, these are all... They're a complicated pitch development. They're complicated developmental things that I would not expect the Mets to be good at yet. Like, I'm not expecting them to take Maddox Bruns and fix his control or something like the Dodgers do. But there are layups. Like, teams have figured out how to improve ground ball rates and for hitters and do some basic pitch design and improve command to an extent, and the Mets can't even do that.
I will say, I guess, in their, I mean, not to say in their defense or just to, in the broader context of things, we are talking basically about a month and a half or so of baseball development. In Reimer's case, you know, he was a newly drafted player, so I could see a team just kind of giving him some leeway to just let's just see how he does things his way before we step in and start fiddling with things. Mm-hmm. And in Parada's case and Ramirez's case, they both had a track record of making it work with those weird hitches in their stances and everything. So again, I could see the team saying, okay, well, they've succeeded up till this point doing what they do. Let's not step in and start fiddling with things until we have to. You know, and that then that raises the question, okay, or now we're starting to get to the point where, okay, we have to. And then do the Mets have the capacity to improve on things that they touch, which is a big question mark at this point, given there's no track record really. And obviously it's all also amplified by the fact that just literally everything that can go wrong is currently going wrong.
Yeah, bad vibes for the org as a whole this year.
Yeah, it's kind of like the major league level. Like everyone is just seeming to slump at the and just kind of suck at the same time. Similar, you know, if we, we'll get to Ronnie Mauricio and Mark Vientos in a minute or two. Obviously, those guys are not slumping, but those are kind of the exception to the rule. You know, everybody else is really not doing particularly well.
Yeah.
And, you know, if it was just one or two guys that, you know, if Blade Tidwell was the only one that was kind of struggling, it would be easy to not forget about it, but it'd be easy to downplay that if everyone else was doing well. If Kevin Parada was the only guy who was not really hitting too well, we could say, okay, well, everyone else is, you know, he'll figure out what he has to figure out. When everybody is doing that at the same time, not great. Stanley Consuegra is the only other guy I would say that's doing well in the system right now.
Yeah, I mean, even Jett's been a little bit slow, and he got hit in the hand, I think, a little while ago. So, like, his hot start has cooled down, certainly. So, I don't know. I keep trying to, as I watch my Sixers just absolutely fall to pieces here, like, try to find something positive for the team right now, and it's like, I don't know what there is. So,
well, let's shift our focus to the two things that are the only positives right now, I guess. Mark Vientos and Ronnie Mauricio. Through 37 games now, so that's about a third of the season. We're starting to minor league season is about 120 games, give or take. So, the 37 games, Vientos is hitting .331, .416, .676, with 11 doubles, no triples, 12 home runs, no stolen bases, and 19 walks to 33 strikeouts. Ronnie Mauricio, through 39 games, is currently hitting .353, .389, .622. With 17 doubles, 2 triples, 7 home runs, 8 steals and 12 attempts, and 8 walks to 27 strikeouts. the, I don't want to say lone bright spots, because there are some other players that are doing well, but they don't, you know, especially in Syracuse, but they're not guys that like factor into anything either developmentally or whatever. So, you know, it's kind of hard to get excited about Jonathan Araruz or, you know, Lorenzic Cedrolo, you know.
I'm struggling to contain my overwhelming excitement for these players.
Danny Mendick. Ooh.
I forgot about Danny Mendick, honestly.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, obviously the Mets are struggling right now. I don't know. Are they under 500 or are they at 500? I think they're like one game under 500 right
now. Something like that. Yeah. It's not great.
It's definitely not where we expected them to be.
They lost 3-2 to the Nationals to fall to 19-21, and they're currently losing 1-0 in the second game. Like, to the fucking Nationals, who are not trying.
So it's not good. The offense has had some major problems. There's a lot of roster spots where the Mets are not getting much.
Do you want to guess how many Mets in the lineup right now have an OPS over 700?
Over 700.
Mm-hmm. How about you start over 800? Guess for over 800.
800, I would say nobody.
Two. Brandon Nimmo and Pete Alonso.
Oh, yeah.
Alonso's all the way down to 836. Like, he's been bad for a couple weeks. How many over 700?
I'm going to say three.
Four. Mm. Those two, McNeil and Lindor.
Okay, that's what I figured. I wasn't sure about Lindor, but...
Mm-hmm. Starling Marte has a 581 OPS. Tommy Pham has a 682 OPS. Mark Canha has a 674 OPS. Like, Marte is the big one, though. Like, why is Marte still playing?
I don't know. But obviously, the Mets have these two guys in... AAA, I think Vientos is 23 and Mauricio is 21 or 22 and 21. Regardless, they are still young. They are, in particularly in Vientos' case, who's spent more time in AAA, showing that there's really not that much left, that AAA pitching is not really that much of a challenge at this point in time. There's clearly a need for the Mets to get injected with some sort of offense. I don't know. So, I mean, there's a couple of, you can't just be like, yeah, just get rid of these bums and bring up Mauricio and Vientos. Like, there are some questions. Who do you remove from the Mets roster to clear a spot for Vientos, Mauricio, or possibly both?
I think this is actually a pretty easy answer. Marte.
Right. Okay.
You put Marte on the IL, and then either you directly call up. I think you have to actually make a couple moves. So, like, you IL Marte, you go find a platoon lefty outfielder, and the name I keep throwing out there is Dominique Canzone. He's on the Diamondbacks. He's a lefty hitter who's pretty good and is totally blocked. You acquire that sort of guy. You put him on the bench and platoon him with Pham. And then you release Escobar and replace him with Vientos. And I guess if you want to simplify that, you just release Escobar and replace him with Vientos straight up. Like, just do that to start. Like, do something.
That is the most obvious thing to me, I think, is releasing Escobar. I mean, he has some utility as a switch hitter off the bench.
But he can't hit.
Right. Well, I was gonna say, but, I mean, he's just doing so bad that it's just... You're getting nothing from that roster spot.
I mean, and it's not like he can play defense either. He's a bad defender at third base, and the one time they put him at second, it looked like a freaking disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not sure that Mark Vientos is a worse defender at third base than Eduardo Escobar at this point.
Probably not. I mean... I have to admit, I really don't remember the last time I saw Escobar playing third base, which is a good thing, I guess.
Yes.
But, I mean, Vientos' biggest issue is just the range. And I'm sure, given his build and his age and everything like that, that was the main issue with Escobar as well, is the range. So,
yeah, I mean, at this point, Escobar's range numbers are among the worst for third baseman in baseball. Like,
yeah, so you wouldn't be you're not sacrificing defense there.
What are you giving back exactly? Like,
and anyway, I mean, you know, Brett Beatty is the entrenched third baseman, and he's done enough. You know, he's slumped a little bit the last week or last 2 weeks, whatever it's been, but not badly enough that it warrants saying, okay, we're gonna remove Beatty and install Vientos as the starting third baseman going forward. Which now brings up a second question. Okay, let's say you do bring up Vientos or Mauricio. How is playing time going to get divvied up so that either one of those guys, or possibly both, if they both get called up, are getting the at-bats that they need? Because as we saw with Alvarez and as we saw with Beatty this year and last year, when they're getting little bits of playing time, they kind of, you know, were struggling. They weren't really able to get into the groove. And then once they did start getting regular playing time and were getting regular at-bats, they started producing. You know, is it worth calling up either one of these guys, and then they're just kind of languishing on the bench? Like,
or
getting, you know, in Vientos's case, getting slotted into, you know, a couple of at-bats, you know, as a platoon DH or whatever, you know.
This is the other reason, like, why you can't have Buck Showalter as your manager, right? Like,
that too,
among other many problems. Like, there's no reason. Well, I'll say two things here. Like, first off, there's no reason you can't have Mark Vientos on this roster playing a short side platoon DH role, and then also getting two starts somewhere on the diamond every week. Like, so he'll play 4 days a week. That's something you can do. That's not something Buck Showalter can do, but it's something a marginally competent manager could do. So this shouldn't even be a question. But it is, because we're stuck with Buck Showalter. More to your point, I don't really care about managing their at-bats as much as I did for Beatty and Alvarez, because I don't think Mauricio and Vientos are starters long-term. Right? They are, to me, just pure bench utility players or trade bait. So you use them in the role that you most need them for, which for the Mets right now is a bench role.
Mm-hmm.
Beatty and Alvarez are long-term fixtures. I'm not wasting them on the bench and potentially stunting their development.
And then the biggest question, I think, to me, and the most obviously also like open-ended thing, is I see a lot of people clamoring, you know, to rightfully so, to call one or both of these guys up, give them a chance, breathe some new life into the team. Maybe they are the spark that lights some kind of fire, whatever. All possibilities, but let's say that, you know, okay, we trade Vogelbach to get Vientos some more at-bats. We release Eduardo Escobar, or we get rid of Mark Canna. This guy suck. Whatever. You know, what contingencies are there that if Vientos or Mauricio get called up and they suck and then they have to get optioned back down, all of a sudden, like, this roster spot doesn't just become a long-term black hole of just nothingness, kind of like how catcher has been for so long the last couple of years with, you know, Nito and McCann, you know?
I mean, counterpoint, the options you're talking about are not long-term fixtures either, and they suck now, so.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, if you trade Vogelbach, which I'm not in favor of, it's, you know, even though he's not doing,
he's got like a 130 weighted run traded plus.
Right. Well, I mean, but he's hitting like 230 or something, and he's not really hitting for power. It's mostly fueled by on OBP, which a lot of people are annoyed about or whatever. You know, but if you trade a guy like him, or if you trade a Mark Canna, or just jettison him into the sun, whatever, like, it's just I'm not directing this at you guys specifically, just kind of saying, like, to a lot of the people, and I don't think that the people that are listening to this podcast are those people just clamoring for this, so it's probably we're wasting our breath or whatever anyway, but, you know, like, every roster move has a impact on other things. And, you know, if you trade a Vogel back and then you bring up a Vientos or a Mauricio, you know, both these guys, Mauricio and Vientos, are very volatile hitters, I guess is a nice way of putting it, I guess. You know, the likelihood of them flaming out and doing very poorly is very high. And, you know, you give them the chance and that happens, and then you have to send them back down. It's like, oh, shit. Now we don't have Vogel back anymore. Now we don't have Canna anymore. Now we don't even have Eduardo Escobar anymore, whatever. You know, there's, as we've gone over, there's really not too many options in AAA. There are a few more on the hitting side than the pitching side, but it's just problematic that there's so much wrong with this team that you can't even gamble on a spot or two, because that could have a chain reaction of just making the team a lot worse, and they are pretty bad right now.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to be with the like mainstay players they have. I think it's tough to be worse than they are right now. I don't know. Like, I don't. Anyone who's like advocating for dumping Canna or Vogelbach outright, I think, is wrong. But like Escobar is cooked, and Starling Marte very clearly needs an IL stint. Like, there are easily spots open, and I don't know why the Mets are so stubborn in not recognizing these realities.
I forgot also, you know, Pham and Luis Guillorme. I've seen people, especially Guillorme, and how he's kind of struck out or has not succeeded in some high profile spots in the last two or three games or days or whatever it's been. I've seen a lot of clamoring for the team to get rid of him as well, which is silliness because we love Luis Guillorme on this podcast.
Yeah, you need some sort of, I guess you don't, because that's because Lindor plays every day, but I think you'd like to have some sort of backup shortstop on the roster, and who the hell else is it if not Guillorme?
I mean, you could bring up Guillorme, swap out Guillorme and Mauricio.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, look, the positional, from the positional element, it's a lot easier to get Mauricio on this roster, but I just don't think he's good. So
yeah. Well, that's what,
like,
I
you could
saying.
Very you could rather than the gymnastics I suggest for Marte with Vientos, you just IL Marte, call up Mauricio, put McNeil in the outfield. Right. And then you could then also option Guillorme and call up Vientos if you wanted more thump off the bench. There are things to do here. As usual, the Mets are
slow to react.
Slow. Which we thought, like, I honestly thought they had moved past this, right? I thought they had a really nice offseason making these sort of marginal churning moves. They built out some good pitching depth, and now they've gotten just an insane rash of injuries. Like, I'm not going to hold that against them. Shit happens. But, like, the pattern of behavior seemed to have improved, and now we're right back to, nah.
Like, dude. Yeah, I mean, in terms of the these marginal kind of bench moves, exactly, you know. Well, that's why they are under 500 by two games.
Just terrible. Just depressing all around.
Well, I don't know. But, I mean, it can't get much worse. I mean, it can, but realistically, it can't.
Now, this is the Mets.
Again,
it can always get worse.
These are the Mets. Yeah. Well, I'm happy that I'm not the one who has to figure these things out. But if I was, I'd be probably be getting paid a lot more money. So
that's true.
Maybe I do wish I was the one that had to figure these things out. And realistically, like, there's no accountability in baseball anyway. So
it's not like guys get fired every year for this sort of shit.
Yeah.
Okay, if Billy Epler brings us Ohtani, all will be forgiven.
Well, hey, that gives some positional versatility there.
Uh huh.
I mean, that is the solution to everything. Just sign Otani.
Yep.
All right. Well, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I'm at Steve Sipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at KenLevin91. And Thomas is at SedMithSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it. And, of course, we thank you for listening. And as a reminder, we are now Patreon-based. So if you like our podcast or if you like any of the other ones that are in the Home Run Apple Network, you can subscribe for just $5 a month and you'll get extra stuff like bonus content and bonus episodes and all kinds of other good things. So we will be back next week. Until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.